You are listening to On The Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Monday, October 16th, 2017 NBA edition of On The Daily, brought to you by RotoViz Radio. I'm Matt LaMarca, who you can find on Twitter at Matt LaMarca, and I'm joined tonight by Tony East, who you can find on Twitter at TEastNBA. Tony, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I'm recovering from a long weekend with some cold medicine, so hopefully I don't cough too much today.
We'll do our best in post-production to help you out in that department anyway. I just want to take this moment to mention the RotoViz NBA Pass. It's officially live at this point, so head on over to the podcast website. That's rotoviz.com/NBA podcast. You can get a 30% discount to the season-long pass over there. We're going to be having a ton of coverage this year. Plays of the day article 7 times a week, GPP plays. We'll have some season-long coverage. I just finished putting up a series on different draft strategies that you can employ. We're going to have a live blog running on specific days to highlight the injury news. And then we're going to have a lot of analytically driven pieces from what we're calling the analytics team this year. So tons of stuff. Think it's going to be an awesome year of coverage, and I recommend getting in as early as you can. I also ask that you please rate and review the show on iTunes. So this is it. This is the 6th Division preview. We're going to look at the Northwest Division today. The regular season is right around the corner. It starts on Tuesday, and this probably won't get up until Monday. So if you're listening, NBA is basically here.
We're so close.
We made it. All right, let's dive in with the first team. Portland Trail Blazers. They are coached by Terry Stotts. This is his 6th year with the squad. They were 41-41 last year, 11th in league in offensive efficiency, 21st in defensive efficiency, and tied for 13th in pace. Vegas has them pegged this year basically right as how they finished last season, 40.5 wins, and they are plus 1,400 to win the division, plus 10,000 to win the West, and plus 20,000 to win the title. As far as additions, they didn't really add too much, just 2 draft picks, Zach Collins and Caleb Swanigan. And departures, they lost Alan Crabb, Festus Ezeli, who never really played for them anyway, and Tim Quarterman. So let's start by discussing the backcourt. That's sort of the main DFS focus on this team most nights. How are you planning on approaching them this season?
Well, first of all, I'd like to start and say Portland is fun as hell to watch. They're like the if you watch one NBA game a week, pick Portland. You know, they're fun on offense and they suck on defense. And that's kind of a good way to approach their backcourt. If you're in a roto league and you're looking for your defense guys, avoid Lillard and McCollum. But on your DFS nights, I actually wrote about this. I can start, for example, on Friday, the Portland plays in Indiana. And last year against the Pacers, Damian Lillard had 60 points in their 2 games and was a plus 25. It's pretty much just matchup dependent for them, but they're both such good players, McCollum and Lillard, that, you know, whoever their matchup is, they're still going to score well on. They're both so dominant on offense. McCollum's one of the best shooters in the NBA, but approaching the backcourt is just matchup dependent because one of them's going to go off every night.
Right. And that's the thing, is that these guys are pretty negatively correlated. So you very rarely, I would say, want to play them in the same lineup.
Right.
Lillard, one thing that I did notice, he really gets up, it seems like, when he plays against the really good teams. Last year, when he was facing teams with a 75% win percentage or better, he was at 46.5 fantasy points. Everybody else, 41.5. So pretty nice little spike in production. That's obviously a really high win percentage threshold, so it's really only looking at matchups against like the Warriors, the Cavs, maybe the Clippers at certain points last year, but you definitely want to take advantage of Lillard, I think, against the good teams. For some reason or another, he definitely gets up in those matchups.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. He's like a really prideful guy, and he loves playing for Portland, so that makes sense to me. I feel like he always feels like he deserves more respect since he's never been on an All-Star team, All-NBA team, so that makes sense to me.
Right. And then McCollum's sort of the opposite because, as we mentioned, the correlation play. So against bad teams, he averages pretty significantly more fantasy points. So just something to keep in mind as the season goes on.
It's hard because it's rare that they both have a great game too. So that's why I say it's matchup dependent, because like they play the Pacers, who I talk about the most on Friday, and the Pacers have a terrible defensive point guard and okay defensive shooting guard. So it's like you roll with Lillard that game, but not McCollum. But in the opposite scenario, you'd do the opposite, obviously.
Right. All right, let's talk about Yusuf Nurkic. He was a big late-season addition for the Blazers last season, sort of helped them make their last push into the playoffs. What do you sort of expect out of him this season?
Yeah, he's now officially their third-best player, which is a huge jump from where he was in Denver. So I kind of do expect him to be super dominant. They don't really have another guy like him who can set a screen or roll to the basket or even kind of protect the rim. So I think he's going to play a lot of minutes for them just because their other centers are, like you said earlier, Zach Collins, who they drafted, who has never started a game. Have you seen that stat before? He hasn't started a game since like high school or something.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so Nurkic is going to get all the minutes he can handle, especially in a contract year. He's going to be working his butt off for that money in the offseason. And, you know, now that he's finally in a role where he can start every night and not be overshadowed by Jokic, I think he's going to really shine this year, especially given that the defense can never focus on him with Lillard and McCollum on his team.
Right, and at times they ran the offense through him in Portland last year, which was cool to see. He would kind of operate at, like, you know, the elbow or whatever and distribute a little bit to Lillard, McCollum. He averaged, you know, a pretty decent number of assists once joining Portland. So it's kind of fun. I like when big men get to run the offense a little bit. He did average 37.5 DK points as a member of the Blazers. So he's going to have an opportunity to make a big role. Yeah, he had some big games. I do have some questions about how he's going to hold up long term in that role. You know, he's never been a guy who's really been able to play 30 plus minutes on a consistent basis, but that's not really a concern for the beginning of the season. It might be a concern for like season long leagues. I've definitely moved him down my board just a little bit for that reason, but early in the season, I have no problems targeting him. I think he's going to be a strong play.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I never knew he was that high in DK. Especially rebounding too, because I still don't actually know who's going to be starting at the power forward for them, if it'll be Vonleh or Aminu. But either way, neither of those guys are too good on the glass, so it's going to be really him grabbing the rebounds.
You have an X factor for this team?
Like I just said, they don't really know who's starting at the four, but Aminu is far and away their best defender. So in real basketball, Aminu's their X factor to success. The more he plays, you know, the better their defense will be. But DFS-wise, X factor is probably McCollum. Just like, you know, he kind of is the most important guy for them, because with Lillard, you know, you're getting 25 points and awful defense, and, you know, he'll probably be a slightly positive player. But McCollum can kind of dial it in on D, and his shooting's a little more inconsistent. So, you know, if he's on an on night, Portland's hard to beat.
Yeah, so the power forward position, I do think I agree with you there, is like sort of the one that's up in the biggest question marks right now. I'm going to throw Caleb Swanigan's name in there a little bit.
Love Swanigan.
Over 15 rebounds per 36 minutes so far in the preseason. He was a rebounding machine in college. If he can get the opportunity, I think he's going to be a big factor on the glass. And he's shown some three-point range. I don't think he's necessarily at the point where you want him shooting a ton of threes in the NBA, but he has shown at least some capability to knock it down. So he, from a fantasy perspective, might be the most intriguing guy if he can carve out a role this season.
Yeah, he was going to be part of my hot take too, because he was one of those guys in college that had the statistical projections that made him look like he was going to be an absolute beast in the NBA. And I think by the end of the year, he could really carve out a 20-minute-a-game role.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I like that call a lot. So my bold prediction for this team, and it may not even be that bold, but I'm saying this is a sub-500 basketball team this season. They don't make the playoffs, and that in the offseason, they think long and hard about the long-term pairing of Lillard and McCollum.
So it's funny you say that, because I've thought about that a long time too. Like, what kickstarted this Warriors dynasty? The very first move was that Monte Ellis and Curry didn't work, and they traded away Ellis, right? So right. Thinking something like that could be a huge deal for them. And I also think that they could be under 500, which, you know, they're a good team, but it's crazy looking down. They could literally finish last in this division.
Yeah, this is a loaded division. I'm with you there.
It's crazy.
And the Western Conference in general has, I think, you know, 12 teams maybe that you can make legitimate playoff cases for.
Yeah, so it's impossible.
It's going to be a tough ride to make it if you're not above 500.
Yeah. I don't think, no chance the last team's even under like 44.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, let's move on to the guys who are the favorites in the division right now, the Oklahoma City Thunder. They are coached by Billy Donovan, third year with the team. Last year, they won 47 games. They were 17th in offensive efficiency, 10th in defensive efficiency, and 8th in pace. Right now, Vegas has them pegged at 52.5 wins. They're minus 150 to win the division, plus 750 to win the West, which is tied for the second best odds with the Spurs, and then plus 1200 to win the title, which is behind only Cleveland, Boston, and obviously Golden State. They added Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. Those are the two big additions. They also brought in Raymond Felton and Patrick Patterson. And then departures, they lost Victor Oladipo, Taj Gibson, Enes Kanter, Doug McDermott, and Domantas Sabonis. So obviously Russell Westbrook last season was just a monster. Basically playing him in DFS every night he was on the slate was the correct decision. There has to be some step back for him this year with their new additions, right?
Well, it's weird. Like, shouldn't assists be easier? But yeah, absolutely a step back. You know, if he's playing more team-oriented basketball, then there's definitely a step back just in that it's time for him to, you know, not get the rebounds and focus on winning basketball, which is him running up the court and distributing more to George and Anthony and all these new guys that they have. And now that Alex Abrines is going to play more, he's going to be hitting more shooters, and Patrick Patterson's a really good shooter, stuff like that. So I still think he's going to be one of the best plays every night, just in a different way. He could be a good assists guy in Roto now, and he's still going to be a 25-point scorer.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even when he was playing with Kevin Durant, who's, you know, maybe the second best player in the league, you know, he still found a way to get off close to 20 shots a night. So I don't think bringing in Paul George and Carmelo Anthony is going to slow him down too much. But I do think that, you know, he has taken a bunch of criticism for kind of the style of basketball that he played last year. So I think for sure he has to take a step back. I mean, even if they didn't bring in new guys, he it would be virtually impossible for him to hit those same thresholds last year.
Yeah. You
know, he smashed the record for usage rate in the season at 41.65. And he also posted the third highest all-time assist rate. So he was, you know, commanding the ball just at a astronomical rate between those two statistics. And, you know, it's just not the right way to play basketball. Like, every guy on that team last year besides him had a down season. And I think there's obviously got to be some correlation between the two things.
There totally is. And another thing, too, is like the triple-double thing. He got all those rebounds and whatever about the stat padding. That's not what this is about, but it's like, he was probably the second best rebounder on that team behind Steven Adams last year, right? Like, Enes Kanter's a pretty terrible rebounder. Taj Gibson's not the best, and Sabonis isn't the best, and Oladipo and McDermott are not very good. But now he's got Paul George, who's an astounding rebounder for his position. He still has Adams. Patrick Patterson's a pretty good rebounder, and Melo's like 6'9". He's not good, but he's 6'9". So just by default, he won't even have to go for those. And even if he does, he'll still get less just by having good rebounders on his team now.
Yeah, you would think the rebound number more than any of the other ones falls down pretty drastically.
Yeah, that's the biggest one.
All right, let's talk about Paul George. You mentioned his rebounding ability. I think that he's kind of going to be, you know, not a facsimile to Draymond Green, because that's a pretty blasphemous comparison, but I think he's going to kind of need to assume that role as, you know, doing whatever the team needs that night in order for this situation to kind of work in OKC.
I totally agree. I think he's like the second best player on this team in literally everything, right? Like the second best scorer, the second best dribbler, the second best rebounder, the second best defender. It's so weird, like, that he's literally the second best at everything, and that's why he's going to be that jack of all trades kind of guy. I think every time Westbrook's out, Paul George is going to be in because of that exact same reason. He's a pretty good shot creator, especially coming off of screens. I watched him a lot last year with Indiana. They ran a lot of double screens for him. But anyway, yeah, a lot of screens for him. He can dish to the shooters that Oklahoma City has. And, you know, he's going to be able to get his bucket still because he's Paul freaking George. So, you right. know, he's still going to be scoring and creating. It's going to be weird because if he is that second best defender on the team and he's given a lot of energy on that end of the floor and he doesn't have to try on offense at all because of Russ and Melo, maybe his scoring takes a dip. So it's going to be hard to see because I don't know between him and Melo, who kind of assumes the third fiddle role, what to truly expect from him. I kind of think it's what you said, where George has decided on a night-to-night basis. So I don't think I expect too much offense from him, but more like being really impactful.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think he averaged 24 points a game last year. I think that goes down certainly under 20. It might even get down like below 18. I really think it's possible. He's going to, I think, be like a perimeter shooter on the offensive end, a little bit of a secondary ball handler type guy, but not because he can't, but just because there's only so many shots to go around and so much ball handling to go around. If not, then Westbrook has to really sacrifice his game. So I think Paul is going to be increased impact on the defensive end, decreased impact on the offensive end, if I had to make a stand on it.
I would agree.
So on the other hand, I think this system is kind of going to benefit Carmelo Anthony perfectly.
Yeah. His skills are scoring, right? That's it. So in New York, it's like, okay, my point guards are guys you've literally never even heard of before. And now I'm playing with Russell Westbrook and Paul George, and I'm going to be wide open like 30% of my shots. And I was looking last year and like under 10% of Melo's shots were wide open. Like Russell Westbrook had more wide open shots than Melo last year.
Right.
That's crazy. So now Melo's going to have an absurd amount of wide open shots, and he shot like above 45% on wide open catch and shoots last year. Like he's going to be unbelievable in that situation. And I just said that like Russ is out, Paul George has to be in, but Melo can totally take the ISO load of scoring for 2 or 3 minutes if they're both out, you know. So I think he's just going to be awesome on offense in this new system. He's still going to suck on defense, but if he can score because that's all he'll have to do, then he'll make up for it just fine.
Right. I mean, everybody wants to compare this situation to like Olympic Carmelo Anthony, where, you know, he's the perfect teammate and he just shoots when he's open and kills it. And, you know, obviously he's not going to have the same exact teammates that he would have if he was on the Olympic team, but it's going to be similar. And he should get a lot of open catch and shoots. Like you said, I think he was still above 90th percentile in terms of catch and shoot last year per synergy. So I think it's going to be an awesome fit for him. My bold prediction for this team is actually going to be that he leads the team in points.
Ooh, I'm out on that one. Sorry. You can have it.
It's a bold prediction for sure, but I think he could get to maybe like 25 a game. And then if Russell focuses more on being a distributor, I think it could happen.
Yeah. Russ outscored KD on this team. So, I'm still picking Russ.
That's where the smart money is. all right. You have an X factor here.
Is the bench too broad?
No, but that's fine.
I mean, we just talked about Melo and PG and Russ, and you know, you make the trades they made to get Paul George and Melo every time, but they did 2-for-1 trades, right? So now Roberson's probably their fifth starter, and then Patrick Patterson's their first guy off the bench, and then it's just nobody. Like Raymond Felton's okay, I guess, and like Alex Abrines is okay, I guess, but they just have like nothing coming off the like Jeremy Grant. I can't even remember guys' names. I'm thinking really hard. it's gonna be tough. Either A, in case of an injury, or B, just like I know they sucked when Russ was out last year, so they'll have to stagger big time. And how they handle that is my X factor, just because those guys are not super talented.
Yeah, we'll see what Billy Donovan can do, because I don't remember if he staggered Durant and Russell when they played together. I know that Scott Brooks never did, and like it drove basketball people absolutely insane. So,
yeah, it's like almost why Scott Brooks got fired, and Donovan was okay at it, but not good enough apparently.
My big X factor here is Andre Roberson. So at this point, we kind of know what he is. I don't see him taking a huge step forward in terms of being a 3-point shooter, but if he could become even average in that, and teams have to even think about him on the defensive end, the ceiling for this team, I think, becomes much, much higher.
Yeah, almost 60 wins if he can shoot. But you've seen in the preseason, you saw that video of Chris Paul literally like waving at him right before he shoots.
Yeah, he's reached literally like peak Tony Allen level of I don't care how open you are.
Yeah, it's really – he airballed a free throw the other night. Like, it's really bad. It's really bad. And they need that – like, if it stays that bad, I wouldn't be surprised if they switch over to Patrick Patterson starting instead. Right,
and just play, like, a hyper-big lineup. That would be interesting, yeah. Too.
Yeah, well, like, it's not, like, ridiculous. Like, Brad Stevens does that. Like, you're a wing or a point guard. Like, and that's kind of what this will be. Like, point guard Russ and then wing with Paul George Mello and then two bigs. Like, it's right. Not ridiculous.
For sure. Do you have a hot take for this team?
Man, They're kind of weird because they've been talked about so much recently that there's been a lot of takes for them. A lot of people say this isn't super hot, but I guess I think they're clearly number four in the West. Like, I still think there's no way they're better than San Antonio.
I think that's a pretty hot take.
Okay, yeah. San Antonio is going to win 58-plus because they're the Spurs. And the Rockets are just better than this team because they have two players who are better than the second-best player on the Thunder. So, yeah, I think they're pretty clearly fourth in the West, actually. I think they're four wins below number three in the West when this shakes out.
All right. I mean, I love Greg Popovich. I worship the ground that dude walks on. I have some slight concerns about that team, but we'll see how that shakes out.
Man, they won 50 in the lockout year. Like, they're gonna win an absurd amount. Like, they're gonna win 50 plus in an absurd amount of games, even without Leonard. Like, somehow Greg Popovich is gonna make Rudy Gay like amazing, and they're just gonna be good.
No, I know it does. If you could just be rich, if you just bet the over on the Spurs every single year, because every year it's like, oh, this might be the year they take the step back. And then they don't. Like, well, people said the same thing about them last year, and they had, honestly, a really good historical season. It was just that they were overshadowed by the Warriors.
They're not, like, a sexy pick ever, but they're always good.
Okay, let's move on to the Minnesota Timberwolves. I don't know if you're going to agree with me on this, but there's no team that I'm selling harder this season than the Minnesota
Timberwolves. Dude, I'm selling the Timberwolves, too. Let's go.
So hard.
Let's go.
So they're coached by Tom Thibodeau, second year with the team, brought him in to fix the defense, and the defense was absolutely atrocious last year. They were 31-51. They were 10th in the league in offense, but tied for 26th in defensive efficiency, tied for 22nd in pace. Vegas has them projected to take a huge jump this year, 46.5 wins. They're plus 250 to win the division, plus 1,600 to win the West, and plus 2,800 to win the title. Vegas has them the fifth best odds to win the Western Conference and the seventh best odds to win the title. So a lot of expectations for this team. Part of the reason why they brought in Jimmy Butler, they brought in Jeff Teague, they brought in Taj Gibson, Jamal Crawford, and they really didn't lose a ton. They lost Zach LaVine and Ricky Rubio out of their starting lineup. They lost Chris Dunn, Brandon Rush, Omri Caspi, Jordan Hill, and Adrian Payne. So let's talk, I guess, why we're both so down on this team, I guess, before we get into anything else.
Yeah, well, I love that when I was down on them and I hear Zach Lowe say, oh, I'm kind of still down on the Wolves, because he's the smartest NBA guy there is. But
yeah, for sure.
They're just so young still, and like their bench is going to be awful. Like, is Jamal Crawford, 38-year-old, chucking up whatever shots off your bench your way to create offense? Like, that's not going to work. I get that Jimmy Butler's like a 10-win player, but they won 31 games last year. Like, there's still so many question marks for me.
Yeah, I really just hate the spacing of this team when their starters are in.
Yeah.
Nick Skiria, who's a smart basketball guy, he's at Nick Skiria on Twitter. He created this space rating tool, and obviously the Warriors are the best. Their space lineup is basically 100%. This Wolves team, with their starting lineup, is going to be 13.3%. You know, Butler, he's taken step forward, but he can't shoot, really. Wiggins is even worse. And they're going to play a traditional power forward, it seems like, most of the time with either Taj Gibson or Gorgui Jang. So I just think the spacing on this team is going to be absolutely horrid.
No, I agree. And, you know, there's, like, ways to score without shooting. Like, they kind of did it last year, but they're counting a lot on Towns, which is funny because it's your first cliff note. We can kind of make this a transition, but like Towns is their only guy spacing the floor. Like Teague's, like they're all just okay, right? So there's so much variability. Like if they're hitting their threes one night, they just win. But if they're, even if they're just like a normal team, they're going to be in a tough situation every night.
Yeah. And if this team does live up to the hype, for me, it's because Towns went just absolute ballistic this season.
Which is not ridiculous to think at all. Like, that's very possible.
Very possible. Post All-Star break last year, he was maybe the best player in the league. 28.4 points per game, 13.4 rebounds, and he had basically 60-44-84 shooting splits.
I did not know that.
So, super efficient from everywhere, and just was amazing. So, I think he's going to have to be a huge piece for this offense to work, obviously, but the question is, I think his role doesn't grow with all the guys that they brought in, which is another reason why I'm down on this team a little bit.
Well, he's better than Jimmy Butler, right? You think that too?
100%.
But the Jimmy Butler doesn't think that, and the Timberwolves don't think that, so that's not going to help him at all. But I think he's better than Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jimmy Butler is a great player. I don't want him to be the best player on my team, which is why this thing fits. But my thing is I'm so down on Andrew Wiggins. Like, I think Andrew Wiggins is just a worse version of Jimmy Butler.
It's funny because we're doing a fantasy podcast, and Wiggins is a pretty good fantasy guy and a terrible impact guy. But I'm pretty down on Wiggins too. It's like that's going to be a bad contract. But I also don't see the fit with Wiggins and Butler. They're both ball dominant non shooters, which is hard to gel. And obviously Butler's defense makes the defensive fit fine, but on offense it's going to be weird because neither of them are super good in spot ups either.
Right. And, you know, talking from a fantasy perspective, Wiggins only gave you scoring last year. He's terrible in virtually every other category. So if that dips at all, he's going to be, you know, a late round type of asset this year. And he's going in the top 50, 60 picks of most drafts, which is ridiculous to me.
Oh, yeah. What's he, maybe 20 points a game as a third option now?
Right.
And nothing else? Yeah.
And no peripheral stats.
Yeah.
And another thing that I'm not loving about this team, and I understand why they did it at the time, but I really think this offense would look a lot better with Ricky Rubio instead of Jeff Teague at point guard.
I agree, and as in general, I think he'd fit better because of defense. But I like Teague a lot because he's from Indianapolis, and I love Indianapolis players in the NBA. But yeah, he's going to be weird because he's just like okay at everything, basically. He's like an okay shooter, an okay passer, an okay dribbler. And they need him to be really good at something every night. And I don't know what that's going to be for them.
Right. And he is a guy just like Wiggins and just like Butler and just like Towns. He needs the basketball. You know, he had a 22.1 usage rate last season, and that was honestly lower than it had been in Atlanta. So this is a guy, again, to me, that I just don't see the fit. Like, I don't know who's going to be the distributor on this team, who's going to be the go-to guy in parentheses. Like, I think there are a lot of questions here.
Yeah, he'd be my pick for X Factor, which is another good transition.
You're killing the segues, dude.
I know. just because, like I said, he's going to have one of those focuses of, okay, am I scoring? Like we just talked about Paul George, like, am I scoring tonight? Am I dishing tonight? Am I locking in on the other point guard tonight? Am I dribbling over a pick and roll and making the defense move tonight? Like, he's got to focus on something and be good at it every night, because if not, they're going to have a lot of trouble, like, not creating offense necessarily, but, like, getting into a set or something like that.
Yeah, my X factor here is Nemanja Bjelica at power
forward. The shoot machine.
They need him for spacing purposes. You know, him over Taj Gibson, I think, would do wonders for this offense. And I think we could see that happen eventually, although Tibbs is such a Taj Gibson guy.
Yeah.
But he shot 38.4% from three as a rookie. He took a step back last year. But I think the best version of this offense would be him, you know, providing some spacing for these other guys to go to work a little bit.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. The only problem I have with that is if your second unit is Tyus Jones and Shabazz Muhammad.
Yeah, going to be a lot of Shabazz ISO.
Yeah, too much Shabazz ISO, which good fantasy, pretty awful NBA impact. So I don't really know how they can not have him in that second unit, especially because Crawford kind of needs the spacing more than anyone on the starting lineup would.
So my hot take for this team, and I think we're going to be basically in the same boat here, but under 41 wins, no playoffs.
I'm not going under 41, but I think they're going to be a 7 or 8 seed, not close to that 5 that Vegas seems to, or everyone really seems to have them at. I put them in as 8th in my own projection. So,
well, I think it's going to be close between this team and the next team, which is the Jazz. So
I agree.
As low as I am on the Timberwolves, that's how high I am on the Jazz. I love the Jazz this year. Quinn Snyder, fourth year with the team. They were third in defense last year, which is obviously where they make their bread and butter. 12th in offense and offensive efficiency, which I think would surprise a lot of people to find out. And they obviously played at the slowest pace in the league. Vegas projecting a pretty big step back, 38.5 wins. They are, I think, the longest odds to win this division at plus 2,000. They're plus 10,000 to win the West and plus 20,000 to win the title. So they lost Gordon Hayward. That was sort of the big reason why people are down on this team. They also lost George Hill, Boris Diaw, Trey Lyles, Shelvin Mack, and Jeff Withey. They brought in Ricky Rubio from Minnesota, which I love that move. They drafted Donovan Mitchell from Louisville. They brought in Jonas Jerebko, Tony Bradley, Epke Udo, and Joel Bullomboy. So I guess the big question here is, can this offense remain competent without Gordon Hayward this season?
Yeah, it's so challenging to truly project. I think so. I mean, like, Rudy Gobert led the league in true shooting percentage last year. Like, obviously Hayward had a big part to do with that, but like, that dude can score. Like, he throws down dunks, he can hit his free throws, he's all right in the mid-range, and he's just so impactful. And Rubio's going to find ways for guys to score. And like, Rodney Hood's pretty good on offense. Like, I think they'll be okay enough that their defense can carry them to victory, personally. But it's challenging because Hayward was so much of what, well, almost all of what they did.
Yeah, I honestly might even be a little bit higher on the offense. I think that they'll probably be below average, but I don't think they're going to plummet in terms of offensive efficiency. And like you said, their defense is so good. That's going to keep them in games.
Well, that like okay, you have a good defense, so you get a stop, and now you're in transition. Like, your offense doesn't matter.
Right, exactly. And for what it's worth, Gobert has been absolutely dominant in the preseason. So yeah. 16.3 points per game in 25 minutes a night. His usage is up to 22% in those games after being roughly 16 or 17 last season. So I think he can definitely assume some of the load. And then Rodney Hood, I think, is posed. He's one of my favorite breakout guys this year.
So yeah, he's got to be salivating that Gary Harris contract.
Oh yeah, he last season had a usage rate of 28.6 with Hayward off the court, and I think that he can certainly assume some of that offensive production. So I'm high on Hood, and the real reason that why I love this team is Ricky Rubio. So I think this is finally the year where Ricky Rubio becomes a borderline star.
He's already there, right? Like, how do people not like Ricky Rubio? What does he have to do?
He doesn't score enough for people. But post All-Star break last year, 16.0 points per game, 35% three-point shooting, to go with 10.5 assists and almost 5 rebounds. And that was playing in Minnesota with some ball-dominant guys. You know, I think he's going to get a nice chance to run the show here a little bit more in Utah. I think he's going to love playing off the pick with Rudy Gobert. I think this guy is going to have just a monster season.
I love Ricky Rubio. Ricky Rubio is one of those guys that, like, you don't get it because all his plus-minus stats and stuff like that are just amazing. But his, like, box score stats aren't good, so you wonder where the impact comes from. And I heard, I forget what podcast talking about it, but it's like, it's the things that don't happen, not the things that do happen. Like, the pass that doesn't happen or the shot that doesn't happen because his defense is so good or something like that. And that's just where he just, like, is he so good? You're so right. Like, I hope he can turn it into counting stats this year because he's just so good.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that we kind of talked about on the previous podcast where his value, you know, he's such a better real-life player than he is in fantasy. And yeah, he still can be an awesome fantasy asset at times. So I'm all in on Rubio this season.
It's going to be weird. Like, I don't know how good is this. Like, they're going to be kind of a weirdly an ISO team on offense. So I don't know how good his assist numbers will really be, but his passing is still important. So, like, I still think he's going to be a terrible fantasy player, but an awesome player.
Okay. I kind of also like Donovan Mitchell as, like, a deep, deep, deep sleeper rookie of the year candidate. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're getting, like, well over plus 1,000 with him right now. And I think he's going to have a big chance to, you know, sort of anchor bench units. And, you know, if things don't work out with Rodney Hood, you know, we could see him, I think, assume a bigger role just in the offense in general.
Yeah, I'm going to say this guy's name wrong, but I'll just say how it looks. Raul Neto is currently their backup point guard. And, like, he's actually fine. He's an okay player. But there's going to be a point where every fan in the Jazz and every person in the Jazz organization says, all right, let's play Mitchell at the backup one now instead because Exum's hurt.
Right. Yeah, no, so, that's totally in his future plans, I think.
Yeah, so he's going to get in that guard rotation pretty quick. So I really do like him as that, like you just said, that rookie of the year sleeper too. And he's looked awesome. And his Twitter is Spida Mitchell, which is pretty cool. So I really like Donovan Mitchell. I think he can do well. He can shoot it a little. He's really impactful on defense. He's really fast. He's got a crazy vert. I actually would have picked him at number 9 in the draft. Crazy. My board had him at 9, but... yeah, I like him a lot.
Over which guys? Would you have taken him over Ntilikina?
Yeah, I had him over French Frank and Monk.
Okay.
And Laurie. I think those were the three he jumped.
Okay. I'm totally fine with all of those.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk X factors here. I had a really tough time whittling it down because I think there are two big X factors on this team.
One of yours has to be Derek Favors, correct?
Derek Favors for sure.
Yeah, Derek Favors plays 75 games, they make the playoffs. Derek Favors plays under 60 games, they don't. Like, that's – he was mine. So he's so good when he plays, he just hurt all the damn time.
Right, and it's a question of how many minutes can they play him too. Because I think pretty clearly, you know, they want to give the majority of the center minutes now to Gobert. But
yeah,
he can come off the bench and play 20 minutes a night and play, you know, 70 games like you said, I think he can be super impactful in that role.
Yeah, he's awesome. He can score. There was a time when they were like, should we trade Gobert and like set Favors as the future at center? Thank God that didn't happen. But
right,
you know, he's awesome. He can play D. He can score. He's super athletic. And he's like not a shooter at all. And he can still score, which shows how good he actually is at scoring. Like, that's hard to do now.
So in addition to Favors, I think that a big piece of this team is going to be how Joe Ingles handles playing more minutes in a bigger role.
Man, I can't believe we even said his name yet.
Yeah, there were times last year where he was like one of their best players. Like when Hayward was out, he would sort of run the show. And he's one of those guys that does everything seemingly pretty well. You know, he was among the league leaders in three-point percentage. I don't know if he finished there at the end of the season, but he shot 44% from three. It'll be interesting to see if he can, you know, sort of increase his volume this season and keep his percentage really high. He's been a good passer. He can, you know, get steals. He had 1.2 steals in only 24 minutes a game. So I'm really intrigued to see how he handles a bigger role this season because he was one of those guys that was really good in limited minutes. So we'll see if he can translate.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. If his three-point shooting dips, they might have a little trouble with space on the offensive end. But I think he can keep it up. He's always gotten better every year of his career, and he's just one of those fundamental white guys. I hate using those buzzwords, but that's just who he is, right?
Yeah, if he's Australian, I don't know if that makes him white. To me, there's a difference. So
come on, no one looks at Matthew Dellavedova and doesn't say he's white.
Yeah, right. You're right. Dellavedova, that's true. All right, so I've been hyping this team up. So my bold prediction is that this is still a playoff team, and I think they're honestly closer to the 6th seed than they are to like the 8th seed.
My hot takes, they're a lock for the over, so kind of similar to you, but man, are they going to be close in that 8-9 slot. Like, they're fighting it. Like, I think I like Memphis a lot more than a lot of people do, and I think them, Memphis, Mini, and the Clippers are just going to be like clawing at each other for the last 2 weeks of the season for that last spot.
That's interesting because I'm higher on Memphis. I just did the podcast with Vince where we went over the Memphis division, and he's a Memphis guy, and he's extremely low on the team. But I'm high on them too, so it's going to be so fun in the West.
I know we're not talking about Memphis, but I want to just blurt in, like, they have two top 25 players. Like, they're going to make the playoffs. That's just it.
I totally agree with you.
All right. We can move on, though.
All right, so let's get to the last team. That's the Denver Nuggets. I guess this is going to be another key team in playoff seeding because I think they're right in that 8-seed battle as well. Maybe you like them even more than that, but that's kind of where I have them. They're coached by Mike Malone, his third year with the team. They won 40 games last year. And how you were talking about earlier when you were talking about Portland, that's how I feel about Denver. This is the team, if you're only going to watch one game a week, watch them. Fifth in the league in offense at 110 points per 100 possessions, which is awesome. And then they gave back 110.5 to be second to last in the league. And they also played at the 7th fastest pace. So definitely an up and down, just scoring fest team. The over-under this year is set at 43.5 wins, and they are plus 550 to win the division, plus 660 to win the West, and plus 15,000 to win the title. Big additions, Paul Millsap. They also brought in Trey Lyles from Utah, and they lost Danilo Gallinari. So let's talk about this team. Nikola Jokic really blossomed into a star last year. Do you think that he can do it on a more consistent basis this year?
Yeah, that dude's legit. He's got to stop fouling so he can stay on the court, because he's one of the most exciting guys to watch. He's got court vision that you can't teach. He just like knows where all the passes are, and like they're a good job of running basketball how I like in the post, where it's not like you're throwing in for a post up. You're throwing in to like initiate your offense out of the post, and Jokic is just the best guy for that. He's a great scorer. He can get to the rim. He can pass. He can shoot a little bit. And no, like, just watch this guy. You're going to love him. He's awesome. And I totally think he can become a consistent superstar because I'm an analytics dork.
Yeah, I love him too. I do wonder if he's perhaps a touch overhyped.
Oh, no, 100% overhyped. But okay. He's still amazing.
Because I think there are legitimately people who put him in the same conversation as like Karl Anthony Towns. And to me, that's blasphemous at this point. But
no, he's like tier two's best center.
Okay. I'm fair with that. And I think he's going to, you know, have triple doubles, you know, at least 5 triple doubles this year. Like, his ceiling is going to be huge on any given night, but I think he also might have a lower than average floor, given what he does. So,
you know, I put him in tier two for impact and play, but for fun, he's number one. And it's not even close. Like, he's
there,
like,
is
second...
nothing funner than rostering Jokic in DFS.
Well, you just don't know. You could be getting like 60 out of him.
Yep, absolutely.
So he's fun. Yeah, he's fun and he's entertaining. And even if he doesn't have a good DFS game, he's fun to watch because he can do these crazy behind the back passes and spin moves and stuff.
Do you think bringing Paul Millsap into the team helps him, hurts him, or is indifferent?
Paul Millsap's there for defense almost entirely to me. They're kind of duplicative, oddly. Like,
yeah, both great passers.
Yeah, both great passers and creators in like that 15-foot and in range, which, man, I don't. It's hard to say like how this affects Jokic, because in the preseason games, the offense looked the same. It's just like, instead of throwing it to whoever the hell weird Kenneth Faried play, it's Paul Millsap's beautiful taking a guy off the dribble, making a sweet spin move pass or something. You know, like, he's just like, he's got that chess feel to him where he's 2 steps ahead of the defense. He's just like 32 and can't like beat guys anymore. But I think he brings a lot, like spacing, passing. He can set a solid screen. It's just going to be interesting how they use him and Jokic, since they're so duplicative together, if it ends up stalling anything or if it makes it even easier for the rest of the guys to score.
Yeah, I'm with you. How they click, and if it looks like they've been playing together for years and they're just throwing like backdoor cuts, and, you know, I think that their ceiling is obviously super high. But if it's one of those things where they're each kind of holding the ball a little bit, I think it certainly lowers the ceiling of the team. So we'll see. I think certainly anytime you can bring in Paul Millsap to your team, you do it. So anybody else on this team that you're sort of keeping your eye on?
Trey Lyles and Gary Harris, because they're from Indianapolis. But
okay, so this is going to be a consistent theme for you on the pod this year.
Yeah, love okay. Indie players. I can't make that very much more clear. But yeah, I really like Gary Harris just actually as a player. Not the best fantasy guy, more of an impact guy. Great, great shooter, over 40% last year, I believe. I might be wrong, but he was close. He's an awesome shooter. He's an awesome defender. He's an awesome cutter. He's just like an intriguing player. I am interested in Jamal Murray. I was super high on him in the draft. I'm also interested in Moutier because I was high on him in the draft. If he can cut down the turnovers, he could actually, you know, be a really impactful player. So truly, I'm interested in their whole team. It's just I'm interested if they can finally be good, which is concerning.
Yeah, I hear you on most of these guys. I think Harris is another one of these dudes who is better in real life than he is in fantasy, but he was super efficient last year, like you said, 42% from three and 50% from the field on a decent amount of attempts. And he played like a billion minutes a game last year. So I think they're a little deeper this season if everybody's healthy. But that was the thing, was they were all hurt at different points last year, including Gary Harris. He only played 57 games. So it's possible that it's a similar situation this year. And there are a lot of intriguing guys. You know, like Will Barton, even if he's going to get minutes, he's shown a huge DFS ceiling. So,
yeah.
But 100% Jamal Murray is my X factor for this team.
Yep.
I love Jamal Murray. I want Jamal Murray to be a thing so bad. And I think that on this team, when you don't need a traditional point guard per se with the passing ability of Jokic and Millsap, I don't see how he doesn't become, you know, the primary guy at point guard. Unless he's so bad on defense that he's just giving back every single bucket that he gets. Because I think as far as shooting and offensive ceiling, this guy's one of the best guys in the league, not even just one of the best guys on the Nuggets.
Yeah, he reminds me a lot of Jamal Crawford right now, where it's like when he's hot, it's like, wow, he's not going to miss the rest of the game, but he still can't stop anybody. And that, like, he's so exciting and fun, and he totally has like the dribbling and creation skills to be a really elite player someday. Like, I remember in the Kyrie Irving trade saga when it was like they're looking for Tatum and Josh Jackson and someone else and Jamal Murray. Right. Everyone else was like, Jamal Murray? And I was like, yeah, good for the Cavs. Like, way to go.
And the Nuggets apparently didn't want to give up Jamal Murray.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either. He's awesome. The fact that they were able to get him at like the sixth or seventh pick, I can't remember, is awesome for them. I like Jamal Murray too. My X factor, man, I don't know. It's going to probably be the logjam at backup four. They got to figure that out. They got a lot of backup fours.
Yes, they do, because we didn't even mention Hernan Gomez, who was kind of like a mini breakout player last year. Like 1-15, this might be one of the deepest teams in the league.
The Jazz, this team in Miami are the three probably deepest teams in the league.
So,
Well, Golden State, but like they're exhumed from every conversation ever.
Right. So is this a playoff team for you?
My hot take was coming up, but hammer the over. Denver is, I think, very clearly in the tier of their own at number five in the West.
Really?
Is that pretty hot? Yeah. So like you just said, Gary Harris played 52 games last year. Jokic wasn't starting for 20-odd games. Like half their team got injured. Jameer Nelson started over 40 games, I think, for them last year. And they still went 40-42. Like now they just added Paul Millsap, who's probably like a 6-win player. So add a couple wins for their injuries and add Paul Millsap. Yeah, they're going to be damn good.
Yeah, the Jameer Nelson thing was weird because, like, that was by choice that they played him all those
minutes. No, they were like, hey, he'll help.
Yeah, they were like, Moutier sucks, and as I know you said you're high on him. Unless the guy figures out how to shoot the ball, I don't know if you can play him. But, like, they voluntarily gave Jameer Nelson so many minutes last year. So, for me, it's all about the defense. Like, if this team defends, they're going to be awesome because we know they can score.
Yeah, they could be the second best offense in the league.
Yeah, totally.
It's not even like weird. Like they were second. I know this is like the most popular stat ever on the internet, but they were second from the time they put Jokic in the starting lineup at the end of the year. Which that stat does never counts for the fact that that was right about when Gary Harris came back from injury. But when those two were in the starting lineup together, from then for the rest of the season, they were the second best offense in the league behind Golden State. Like it's not ridiculous to think that at all. And their defense should just default go up from adding a great defender in Paul Millsap right. And now starting Wilson Chandler instead of Gallinari. So I think they're going to be awesome.
All right. Sounds good. My bold prediction is Jamal Murray averages 15 a game this year.
Love it. Love it.
So that might be a touch high, but I think for sure he takes a big step in his second season.
I hope so, man. He's awesome.
All right. That's going to do it for this NBA edition of On the Daily. For Tony, who you can find on Twitter at TEastNBA. I'm Matt LaMarca, at Matt LaMarca. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to On the Daily, the RotoViz Daily Fantasy Sports Podcast, powered by RotoViz Radio. And special thanks to Randy E. Aguabo for the introduction. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the established RotoViz Radio feed. Contact us via email onthedailydfs@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter @onthedailydfs.